I was just a pastor in a little country church, and I mean little. First Sunday I went there, we had 12 people in that church, and they thought that was a crowd because they'd only been having three or four. And in that little country church, we began to go camping, and because that seemed to be one of the real good ways to reach kids. And they'd go camping with you a lot quicker than they would go to church with you or to Sunday school. They'd accept an invitation to go camping a lot more quickly. I remember one Sunday I'd said to the folks, it was just to everybody in church, all 20 of them. Might have been 22, I'm not sure. But anyway, it was just that little gang, and I said something about, we're going to have a young people's party this week at Horse Thief Canyon. And this was just down here in Michigan, so there aren't too many canyons in Michigan, but I thought that was a good name. And so somebody, right away, they say, where's Horse Thief Canyon, you know? And I said, that's secret. And you just be here, and we'll go to Horse Thief Canyon from church. Well, one of the men in the church had a farm, and Thornapple River ran through this farm, and he had taken me down there just a few days before that to try and catch three or four horses that he'd had running loose on that about 40 acres that summer. And the burdocks, how many of you know what burdocks are? How many of you don't have the least idea what a burdock is? Now, that's what I was afraid of. But they're weeds that grow up about like this, and they're all covered with burrs. And you come along in the fall, and all those burrs are out to catch on anything they can or to be blown by the wind, you know, and just to spread that seed. And so here are these big old burdocks out here, so high you can't see the horses, except when you hit a patch where maybe there aren't any burdocks, and then you can see horses, and you just see them going through just like that. And they're kind of, by this time, they're just kind of a big burdock themselves, you know, because they're all covered with them. But anyway, we eventually got, and this Thornapple River ran through there, and we'd gone back and forth across that river so many times, I don't know how many times, trying to get them up into the corner where I had a little corral to catch them. And so eventually we had the horses and we went home. But I said to the guy that day, boy, this would be a terrific place to have a camping site. I could really have some fun down here with the boys. The Thornapple River goes through there. The big elms were along on either side. That was before Elm's disease had come along, so that dates me way back. You know? Anyway, I said, if we could just fall a couple of these trees across and make us a bridge, that'd be a great thing. And we built us a little, you know, fire circle here along the river, and it was sandy and dandy. And I said, if we could just do something like that, that'd be great. So he said, yeah, it's okay with me, you know. So that's where we were going. That was Horse Thief Canyon, but the kids didn't know it. And so we went down to Horse Thief Canyon, and we began to clear out the boys, and I would work on this, you know, and we did this for several weeks. And then one day, I don't know, whatever put this in this boy's head, but he said, why don't we invite the girls down here? And I don't know whether his mother told him that or his father told him that or where he got the idea, but so eventually that came to be because by this time we had some nice log benches all around there, and we had that fire circle all built up, and we had the bridge across the river, and we had cleared for a baseball diamond and so forth and so on. And then the opportunity came not too long after that with a fellow by the name of Cal Buchema, whose picture is over on the east side there in the chapel with his trombone. And he and I were kind of fellow pastors out there, only he was in the city in Grand Ledge, big town, and I was out in the country. Anyway, to make a long story short, we rented some sites from the state. First one, now you're not acquainted in Michigan maybe, but over across on Lake Michigan side, there's a town by the name of Muskegon. And we used to rent a campsite there. It was an old CCC camp. Still standing in those days, it's gone now, but we rented that one, and we went camping. It cost us 10 cents a camper per week, and we took 30 youngsters the first year. It cost us $3 to rent that site for a week. In the process, there was a matter of transportation. Second year we went, I think we took something like 64. Third year we I've forgotten these numbers now. I have to go back to the book and refresh myself once in a while on this. But eventually we'd gotten to 200 and 300 and 400 and 500. And I think the last year while we were still camping, we'd gone to something like 678 youngsters. Not all at the same time, but spread over about 6 weeks of time. We'd grown so that we not only rented Muskegon, but we rented up here to the north, right kind of right there, almost at the peak, at the point of the lower peninsula. There's a Camp Akiak, and we'd rented Akiak and Muskegon, and we would run them consecutively, and took a few hundred youngsters. It was in those days that Hester, who was David's mom, and whose picture's up there on that fireplace up there, we used to begin to talk about going to camping full time, you know. And bless her heart, she never said, "What in the world are you thinking about, you crazy guy?" My wife never said that. And one of the reasons was that camping seemed so good to me was because of the end results that I saw in the kids who went camping with me. There was, well, I can't go into all that stuff, but that would just seem like a driving motive, was that end, the objective that you could have, and what I had seen in so many of those youngsters. So eventually, that transportation problem had gotten to that point, and it came to a point at just about the time we were at that 658. You try and transport 658 youngsters and take them about 300 miles north or 200 miles west, and you've got a problem. Well, we had churches that rented us or let us have their buses. Some of them, I don't know that any of them rented us to. I guess maybe we gave somebody $5 once, but not very often. But anyway, these buses we'd rent, you know, and one time the plug dropped out of the oil pan, you know, and we burned the motor. Well, that was a lot of money to replace that motor. And we were just always running into one little problem and another. The tire would go flat, and before you could stop, it'd ruin the thing, and then you had to buy a new tire for their bus. And that griped me inside. Not really, but I just didn't like to do it. So anyway, make a long story short, I remember that last year while we were still at Muskegon, I wrote the trustees a letter from camp, and I said to them, "I sure wish we could buy some buses of our own." And one of the trustees wrote back and said, "In our school district, they just had a bus that caught on fire, and it's pretty well burned up, but we could get it for just a few hundred dollars." Another guy, he wrote me a letter, and he said, "I know where there's an old bus that was hit by a train, but it was just hit on the back. And I think we could get it for, you know, not very much." So when we had our first trustee meeting, which comes along every year right after summer camp is over, I said to him, "I didn't mean old buses. I said, what do you say we try to buy some new buses?" See, I had been running old buses. And I was pretty discouraged with it by that time. I said, "Let's buy some new buses." They said, "Do you know what a new bus costs?" "No, not really." So they said, how many buses are you going to buy?" "Two." So they said, "We'll authorize $4,000, that'd be $8,000, for two buses. New. Couldn't be used ones, had to be new." So I went home from that meeting and went to see my first bus dealer the next day. Well, I found out why they had said $4,000. You couldn't buy a new bus for $4,000. That was just impossibility. They all ran closer to six. So I said, "Those trustees are trying to pull a fast one on me, and I'm not to be outdone. I'm going to keep trying on this." So I'd go from bus dealer to bus dealer to bus dealer to bus dealer to bus dealer. I don't know how many I did go to see. But I couldn't find anything anywhere near $4,000. But one morning, on the telephone, there was a call from a man. He said, "Mr. Johnson, you found any buses yet?" "No." He said, "I got some news for you." He said, "A fellow called me last night from the Upper Peninsula. He's got two brand new Dodge buses. He said, you talked to me about $4,000 a piece." And I said, "Yes, that's right." And he said, "We can get these for $4,000 a piece He's been elected to school board. I can buy them at less than he bought them for. And he said, I'll pass that difference along to you if I can get $4,000 out of you for these brand new Dodge buses, two of them. Ah, good. So I said, I'll be down to see you right away. So I buzzed downtown, Lansing. So he says, how much money have you got? Not very much. And he said, how much money could you get me right now? And I said, well, we set out a pickle jar in camp this summer, and we said, this is for the new camp buses. And the kids put $19.80 in that pickle jar, so we've got $19.80 to start with. Well, he said, that's not very much. Well, I said, I thought it was quite a bit, you know. And I thought the kids did real good. So he said, how soon could you have $500? Well, now this is maybe like September 20th. How soon could you have $500? Oh, I see, you know, trying to kind of stall. And he said, could you have $500 by Christmas? Yeah. How soon could you have another $500? And he began to line me up, I see. You know, and he was going to try and get... Then he said, how would it be if we just put this on an open account on the books for 2 years? No interest. You just pay me what you can. And the reason I strike out at this one maybe is because this was really kind of the first time, I guess maybe, I had just really bit off the impossible, just the absolutely impossible. Because $500 to us, to raise $500 out of a little tiny, because we were taking kids to camp for less than it cost in the beginning. So every camper you take, you lose money on. So you don't make much. Teresa's found that out already. You just don't make much money at this deal. So I said, okay, that sounds good. So he said, now I'll tell you what I'll do. We'll draw these papers up today and while you're here. And he said, I'll get the first bus over and get it lettered, and you can pick it up. I don't know, it was in a couple of days. So we did that. Well, I just can't tell you how exciting that was. I went down to the garage to pick that up, that brand new bus for $4,000, just like the trustees had said. And I was right on. And I was just tickled to death. I wish you could have ridden with me in that brand new 52 Dodge bus. To drive that in at home was a great thing. Well, but that was just kind of a beginning. You see, at that same time, we were beginning to look for a campsite. And I was upper peninsula, lower peninsula, back and forth, east and west. But there was a man by the name of Mr. Openlander who had been in a church that we'd served, who lived just a mile west of Fairview and a mile south. And he lived right down that corner, he and his wife. And they had moved up here from Lansing, and so he used to look for campsites up here for me, and he'd go all around, make trips, watch the paper and so forth and so on. And he'd send me a little list every so often of campsites, and he'd say, if you'd come up, I've got five or six lined up, and we'd go and make that tour, you know, and I'd go and look. They were nice ones, they were dandy ones. The realtors in Lansing, they found out I was looking for a campsite, and so they'd call up and they'd say, could you go with us tomorrow, so-and-so, such-and-such, maybe it'd be Upper Peninsula, and we'd make that whole run. Maybe leave home 3:30 in the morning, up in the Upper Peninsula, back that night. Used to be so funny, you know. You kids won't appreciate this, maybe, but we used to drive in the driveway, and I'd say, now, how much did you say that piece of property was we looked at today, you know? And they'd say, oh, maybe, you know, $100,000, $200,000, maybe $250,000. Well, I said, I'll let you know if I'm interested, you know. I'd go in the house, and my wife would say to me, well, what did you see today? And I'd tell her, you know, man, we saw this big layout, you know, or we saw this, or we saw that, or whatever it was. And she'd say, well, what do they ask for? And I'd say, you know, $100,000, $200,000, whatever it was. And we'd just laugh, you know. Because our the possibilities of our ever landing anything like that was just, I don't know if there's such a thing as a horse race as a billion to one or not, but but to make a long story short, one day we stood on the north end of this lake, And I'm going to hurry because Roscoe's anxious to go. We stood on the north end of Sheer Lake. I won't tell you all the story that goes into getting there and some of that, but we stood down by that old tar paper shack, Kester and I, and we left the car by that gate, that west gate to the National Forest, and we walked down there in the rain on August 31st, 1951. August 30th, 1951. And we bowed our heads that morning, and we saw that one, and we saw that lake, and we said right away, this is sure the place. Now, all those other places we'd looked at, I'd never bowed my head or anything else, or even prayed over them, except that we were praying the Lord would lead us. But when we saw this one, we said, that's it. And we prayed that day there in the rain and said, dear Lord, unless you've got a better place than this, we pray that you'll give us Sheer Lake as a permanent home for Camp Barrackhill. And we went back up to the car, and I remember she wasn't real well even then. She physically, she had, and so I left her in the car, and I walked back through the woods, and I thought I could keep my directions well enough, and I came out right up here between Dining Hall and Chapel, where you will walk over very soon, and I looked down on Sheer Lake, and I just couldn't believe what I saw. It just looked so pretty to me. After having seen it from the flat point and then seeing it from that vantage point, it was such a terrific thing. I just said, oh, this couldn't be. Dear Lord, this just never could be, you know? And we went on our way. September 4th, August 30th, September 4th, I saw the man who owned the property. And I said to him, have you got a price on that piece of property up in Oscoda County? And he said, $20,000. Well, I said, I don't have $20,000 with me today, but I'd sure like to try on this, you know. And so he said, how long does it take you to raise $20,000? Well, I didn't have any idea. I'd never raised $20,000, never tried to raise $20,000. So he said, how about from now until Christmas? This was September 4th. From then to Christmas would be a long time. So I said, okay. And he called me a few days before Christmas, maybe like about the 10th of December, 15th, probably the 15th of December, and he said, how are you coming with your money, Johnson? And I said, well, money's hard to come by at this, you know, this time of year. It's right here at Christmas. And, well, he said, we'll make an extension on it. He said, why don't you let it run till January 2nd or 3rd after the holidays, you know, big extension. So I said, all right, I'll be there to see you. And so January the 2nd, 1952, I was in his office, and he said to me, how much money have you got? I said, I got $12,500. He said, is that cash or promise? There's a difference, you know. And so I said, no, that's cash. And I usually tell people, I shouldn't, I guess, but he sat back in his big leather chair in his office, and he just guffawed. He just laughed. And he said, that's better than I thought you'd do. And so I know what kind of an impression I make. So that was one of the reasons why I said what I did to you when I began this morning. So anyway, he said, we never have really had any written agreement. We've only had a verbal agreement, haven't we? Yes. He said, are you willing to have a written agreement? Sure, you know. So he said, you willing to put down some earnest money? I didn't know what earnest money was. I thought it was all earnest. I thought that's the only way you got it. And he said, if you would put down, I'd be willing to put down a few hundred dollars. He said, we'll set a date, February the 4th. He just kind of grabbed it out of the air. February the 4th, 1952. You be here with $20,000 that day, or you lose the property. And you lose the earnest money you put down. Or, of course, you get the property if you've got the $20,000. So I say, okay. And inside I'm saying, that seems like that's long enough for the dear Lord to work. See, I have changed tremendously inside, and my relationship to the Lord has changed a great deal since back there when I bit off that trustee meeting and suggested to them $4,000 for a new bus. I'm not the same guy. I'm a great deal different by now. That had been back in September. God, the way God worked, I'll never be able to tell, but I know I'm different by now. I'm down here and I'm saying, all right, that seems like that's long enough for God to work. To make a long story short, we got down to just within a few days of February the 4th, and the man called one morning on the telephone and said to me, how are you coming on your money, Johnny? And I said, well, we're still $4,200 short. So he said, have you talked to anybody about that? And I said, no, except to God. And he said, have you tried to get a loan at the bank? No. Have you tried to get a loan from anybody? No. Well, he said, you could get a loan on that and cover that. I don't want a loan. They're too hard to pay back. And so I said, I don't think. So he said, well, would you be willing to go and talk to a friend of mine? If I'd make an appointment for him, would you come and talk to him? Would you go and talk to him? I said, yeah, I'll go and talk. Cheap, you know, talk's cheap. And anybody can talk. And so 2 o'clock that afternoon, I'm in this office. And this man sits across the desk and he said, now my friend has talked to me about you. And he said, but I want to hear this from you. And he's told me your story, but I want to hear this from you. So I tell him my story. And he said, when do you need that money? February 4th. I have to write the check for it February 4th or I'll lose the earnest money that would put down $1,000. So he said, I'll cover that for you. Well, I said, I'm not looking for a loan. He said, no, I don't mean a loan. He said, I don't know. Where is your bank? Where's the bank that Camp Bear Hill keeps this money? And I tell him the bank. And he said, I'll put the money in the bank. You will never see it, probably. And he said, you may not even get a receipt for it. But he said, I'll put it in there. You go ahead and write the check. February the 4th, go ahead and do that. So February 4th, I'm in Bay City, Michigan, in the attorney's office at the appointed time with a checkbook. And I'm ready to write a check. And so, you know, it seems so comical now, so funny now. See, I wasn't quite 40 years old then. No, I wasn't quite 40 years old. And that old fellow, I never will forget the old lawyer saying, the old attorney that day, he was a gray-haired old fellow, was taking care of all this, you know, and he said, you write checks like this, do you often, Johnson? Oh, yeah, I write these all the time, you know. Scribbling this off, you know. But I wish you could have ridden with me in the car from Bay City back to Lansing. That would have been, for the uninitiated as to Michigan spaces, that would have been what? 75 miles, you Michiganders? I just got in that car. The check was delivered. I hoped the money was in the bank. And we had the deed, and I was in the car all alone, and I just sang my head off all the way from Bay City to Lansing. I wish you could have been in there. Maybe you wouldn't have wanted them in there, but that was one of the most protracted praise meetings that I was ever in. Anyway, but that was, you see, that seemed like all the money in the world to me. I didn't know there was any more money left. $20,000 was here and gone, you know? And we only had this property. No buildings. The only building was the old tar paper shack. So let me run just to write quick with just two or three things, man, and then I'll be done for this morning and Roscoe can come along. Maybe one of those to take would be dining hall, then we come to chapel, because we're right here in both of them. You're acquainted with both of these this morning. We were working on a dining hall up there. Let me take a little one. May I first? We just, these aren't the stories, but I just have to take two or three, because, you know, we were to a point where we had the cement floor poured for the dining hall where you eat, that part of it, and the kitchen floor was in, and we had some things in there. Not everything was finished up, but we were trying to get some heat in there for deer hunting camp. We had gotten along through the summer with just some tarps hung over this and that and the other thing, and we'd had our first year of summer camp. But we were getting to the fall, and we needed a little more heat for deer camp. And I remember we wanted to lay up that kitchen. Now you can go and put your hands on these brick if you want to. That the one that comes up right there by the end of the counter, or you're facing into the kitchen up there, that kitchen, there's a chimney that comes up right here. It's painted gray, laid up with brick. And we were down in the basement, and we were trying to get Now, if you know anything about masonry at all, if you put a liner, you can lay 7 brick around it without breaking any brick. But we didn't know that. And so we were trying to go around that, and every time it would come out wrong, and we had to break a brick. But I had heard that someplace that you didn't have to break a brick. So my brother High was here by that time, and I've just skipped so much. But he was saying, how are we going to do this? And so we were doing this way, and then we were doing it the other way, and then we'd flip them over and end for end and back and forth, and then we'd start the other side and work around the other way, and it just wouldn't come out right. And all of a sudden, up above, we cut the hole already in the floor there in the kitchen for the chimney to go through. We had figured we'd get it up that far, and we had cut the hole, and all of a sudden, somebody said up there, what are you trying to do? And we said, you know, we're trying to get these brick to come out right down here. And he said, well, lay them like this. And he said, start on this corner and go this way. And then, hey, that does come out right, you know. Who are you? You know. And so I go upstairs where he is, and I say, hi, and I'm glad to see you. And what are you doing? And what are you doing here, you know? And he said, well, I just came and I live out here. And he told me where he lived, and I knew where that place was. And he said, I just had heard about this place back in here. So he said, I came back in this morning. He said, I come from Fort Wayne, Indiana. No. Columbus, Ohio. And he said, I just came up for a while to the cabin. And he said, I thought of running here while I was here. And he said, I'm a Mason. Oh, I'm an odd fellow. And he said, I'm a Mason. I am an odd fellow. But he said, really true? And he said, sure. He said, that was why I could tell you how to lay those brick around there. He said, that's what I do for a living. He said, I am a Mason. So I said, well, it's almost lunch. I said, why don't you come over and eat? No, I said, I just wanted to come in and see what was here. And he said, I'll have to be going now. And out he went. And we laid it up right. And don't argue with that either when you see it. Then let me run just to one other one. Those are the front windows that are inside there in the dining hall. Those big thermopanes and those big windows that are there. We had gone along on that, and one day I went to Lansing for some materials, and as I went down the street, a man met me, and he said, "Hi, Johnny. You know, what are you doing in town today?" And I tell him I'm here and I'm looking for some windows, and he said, "You know." He said, I believe I could help you maybe. What are you looking for? So I jerk a piece of paper out of my pocket. I don't know if I can remember these direct. I don't know if I can remember these just right or not now. But I said, we're looking for a window, and it's got to be 12 feet 5 1/4 inches long to fill, because we already had the corner post set and we already had the fireplace in there. So I said, I've got to find a window 12 foot 5 1/4. That would be the ideal. Either side, 2 of them just alike. And this fella took off his glasses like that, you know, and I could see the tears running down his face, and he said, you know, I believe God's ordered a mistake. I said, what do you mean God's ordered a mistake? He said, we've got 2 windows in our warehouse that are 12 foot 5 inches long. So he said, if you just put a little shingle on each end, he said, it would fill that perfectly. They were made up and were taken out to the job to be put in, but when they got them there, they were wrong. Either the carpenters there had made a mistake and it was wrong, or else we in the shop had made them wrong. And I said, well, we couldn't afford windows like that. Well, he said, no, he said, I don't mean buy them. He said, we'll give them to you. Oh, I said, yeah, we can take them, you know. So even in those days, you see, the price on a window like that was just, you know, just way out of this world. Now, it'd be just almost impossible to buy one of them. So one day, the sonic boom breaks one of those, or starts to crack one of those windows. And it, through the years, it cracked up and over. And I remember saying to the guys, we ought to get that window replaced because it looks terrible the way it is. And so we had fooled around trying to find some prices. I think Ken Pope gave us $800. That was just for the glass alone, you know. And That wouldn't be putting it in or anything or hauling it or anything. And that would be the, I know that was his price on the thing. So I said, no, we better try that. So Dave one day, when I wasn't here, I guess he'd said to Roscoe or some of the guys, why don't you try some of those windows that are down there in the pole barn? And behind those windows, there's a big story. And I wish I could tell you that, but I can't because Roscoe's running out of time now. And so I say, don't look at the clock like that. Don't be so time conscious. And so they go down and they pick up one of those and they bring it up there. And do you know what? That window, and they had been sitting there for years. They slipped that in there and didn't even need a shim on either end. It fit perfectly. And that just seems like, you know, too much of a, too good to be true. Let me come to chapel with you. And this morning, where you sit, once was just a hillside, you know, like everything else all is around here. And there's a long story behind why chapels are built like they are, and I don't want to go into all that. But everything that you see in all of these buildings you see has come in out of the woods. It's been worked in out of the woods. Everything comes in right from the log, and it's sawed and eventually gets its way here. Those big old trusses up over your head there, those are just poles from the swamp. And there's a long story. Anyway, I remember standing up here in the path with the insurance man at the time of dedication, and he said we had gone through the building, and he said, Mr. Johnson, we'd insure your building up to $125,000. And I say, $125,000? And he thought, apparently, I was disgusted with him, and he said, yeah, we couldn't go any more than that out here in the woods like this. He said, you don't have any telephone, and we didn't have at that time. And he said, you don't have any fire department, and we didn't have at that time. And he said, with all respect to the Fairview Fire Department, they're just a bucket brigade. Don't ever tell anybody from Fairview I said that, would you? And anyway, to make a long story short, and try and shorten it up a little bit at least, he said, that would just be the most we could go out here. It'd be $125,000. Well, I never told him the difference. But our actual cost at time of dedication, our actual cash investment in here, ran around $4,000. So that God, you see, had taken that $4,000 and made, and this is only one building, you see that. I mean, this doesn't include anything else at all. And so, and this has just kind of been the story of our lives, of how God has undertaken in one way or another and used situations and people that we just didn't dream anything about. I wanted to leave a verse with you this morning that just is John 15:7. This was the verse that I used to say to just walking around here all by myself. Before the property was ever ours, I used to drive up here and just claim it, you know. Just come and say, dear Lord, And John 15:7 was the verse I used to say. I've said this walking around this thing I don't know how many times. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Can I go back over it again? If ye abide in me, now that's one, and my words abide in you, that's another. Somehow God knew that if the degree and he knew, I guess, what that would do in us, so that he could trust us then to ask what ye will, and it, say it with me, would you? Shall be done unto you. If ye abide in me, my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Dear Father, I've talked to the kids this morning really about a lot of things I don't even understand myself. And there's such a degree of walking with thee, the degree of faith is so tremendous and so great that I don't know whether we ever really get to understand that or not. I don't think we do. And there are so many things about thyself that are just so great, like Teresa said about how her understanding of yourself grew, your love grew. This would just amaze her. So it amazes all of us, I think. And there are so many of those attributes, those characteristics that belong to thee and to thee alone. They're not found in us. They're not found in the people that we observe around us, in our society. They're not found in our world, really. Here and there we catch glimpses of them, maybe, in some cases, some places, some things. But we never see them, really, full view. But this morning, as we think about it, dear Father, and we consider it, we pray that thou draw us out after thyself in such a way that our minds are expanded, our hearts are expanded, our understanding is expanded. Because as we think upon these things, they really do become part of us after a while. And I pray that for every dear guy and dear girl here this morning, each one of us, there shall come that fuller understanding of thyself that draws us out to an ever-increasing, fruitful walk with thee, as days come and go in our lives. So we thank thee for Navs, and thank thee for their lives, and thank thee for staff this morning as they're here, and our visitors. And we pray that the repetition of all this to some of us may only encourage us to walk with thee more fully, and maybe to hear some of this just for the first time may encourage some of these dear Navs to walk with thee more than they intended to do, and in a greater measure than they had ever really intended to do. Bless our fellowship together, we pray, and we thank thee for the Navs, and we thank thee for Barrackell and its staff, and we pray that that relationship may grow and increase and deepen and be more fruitful as days come and go. May it always be blessed of thee, I pray. In Jesus' dear name I pray. Amen.